Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to Football is Just Around the Corner edition. Luke, I head to Indianapolis in just less than 24 hours now for Big Ten Media Days. Minnesota goes, for those of you trying to keep track, on Thursday, which if you want to head on over to GopherIllustrated.com that day and the days after, you'll get plenty of content as PJ Fleck, Max Brosmer, Cody Lindenberg, and Darius Taylor will be there. And then unbeknownst to the University of Minnesota Athletic Communications Department, fall camp starts on Monday, yet that hasn't been communicated to any of us in the Gopher Media. So, Luke, as you can tell, I'm in rare form here only five-ish weeks away from the season, but how are things for you?
You're just a bit angsty, but that's kind of your MO. So I was going to ask you about fall camp. So this is on Monday, sequence of events, and just getting in a plot of time for people. Today is a Tuesday that we're recording. Ryan should be traveling, I believe, Ryan, on a Wednesday, right? Albeit by the grace of Delta.
By the grace of Delta, if they can get their CrowdStrike things figured out, I should be on a plane tomorrow.
Okay, so watch Twitter or whatever the platform is known now.
Yeah, watch me tweet through the pain.
Just watch him tweet through the pain. And you'll know, especially if it's painful, that he and some other beat writers all pack into a minivan and head their way to Indianapolis.
There's a non-zero chance that both Justin Gard and myself will have to rent a car or take one of our vehicles. I think it's 10-ish hours to Indianapolis from Minneapolis. We're going to have to take shifts driving through the night to get there. So hopefully Delta figures their things out.
I really hope you don't have to do this. But I would be pretty entertained to know, like, what kind of convenience store snacks do the two of you pull together?
Can you imagine the life lessons I'm going to learn from Justin Gard on a 10-hour, well, it'd be 20 hours in total. Oh, goodness. I don't know that he's ready for that.
I mean, anyway, you wouldn't necessarily have to drive back, but you could definitely fly back. But at the minimum, you'd have to drive there. So. Oh man, that would be a trip. Okay. Media day.
That's Wednesday.
Media day Thursday for the Gophers. Are you going to be there for all 3 days, or are you just going to stick around for Gopher Day?
Considering as we're recording this, day one is going on, and I am in the lovely city.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Now that it's 3 days, it's a little strange. So I'll only be there for the third day. I'll only be there for Minnesota. I don't think I missed too much. I'm not one to go around and ask everybody of these different schools, you know, what do you think of Minnesota? I don't know. I don't see a ton of value in it other than just being there and getting a bunch of one-on-one time with the four people that are there. I mean, that's what people care about the most.
I always love this time of year because everybody's still pretty optimistic, right? They're like both from a fan base perspective, but also from like a coaching perspective. And in the coaching respect, they also have to be kind of selling hope, right? And in the end of the day, you know, not everybody has hope as the season goes on and there's disappointment and then certain people are on the hot seat and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I always do love this time of year and the justification that people have for like why they think their team's going to go, you know, 9-3 this year versus the more likely 6-6. And I think those are always fun.
If you watch Big Ten Media Days for the next 48 hours, there isn't a single head coach that will not go up there and say that they don't like their team. They've had a great offseason and they're ready to get going here on Monday. Every single one of them will say the same thing. And that's the same thing I'm sure Fleck will say. And I'm sure Brosmer and Taylor and Cody Lindenberg will tell you that they've fixed the offensive passing game woes. The defense is going to figure out how to stop the run and stop hemorrhaging explosive plays. And then we all get to see on August 29th, everybody puts their pencils down and we find out who's fixed some of their issues, who hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always what's fun about football, right? You see teams come into a season. You can obviously see some of their glaring weaknesses even early in the season, but then they can evolve and get better. And certain programs are better than this than others, right? You think about like Iowa always seems to get better as the season goes on. They often struggle early, right? But I always think that's really interesting. And then, you know, on the converse, Maryland always seems to be great as the season starts, and they drift off as the season goes on.
So is this you essentially predicting that because Minnesota plays Iowa in mid-September this year, it's the fourth game of the season, September 21st, and then they get Maryland off of a bye week in late October, are you essentially guaranteeing to our listeners today, Luke Buehr, that Minnesota goes 2-0 in those games because of those reasons?
You know,
is that what you're saying? Because that's what I heard.
You know, it's hard to argue with that logic, but a lot of things can happen between now and when we record our episode that previews the season. So I'm not gonna definitively say it, but if you had to put a gun to my head, I would say that today, just based on stereotypes.
I'm excited to see where you're at in a month, as we'll see if any fall camp injuries occur. Well, maybe we'll see, maybe not, because we still, like I said, fall camp opens Monday the 29th. That's less than a week away. I just don't understand how, I don't even know if there's a press conference on Monday. Don't know when I get to go to a practice yet. It's just, it boggles my mind at times, some of the foresight, but that's just me, the angsty man himself. This is what happens, Luke, when I turn 32. 32 and 2
We're happy
weeks?
For you. Yeah.
Yeah. The older I get, the more angsty and shaking my fist at the clouds I become.
Yeah. You know, in general, I love the idea that someone in Gopher Communications is just doing this to make you mad and only you mad. Yeah. I love that. I do love that idea. Okay. So today, just to kind of set the stage for our listeners, we are going to do a mailbag episode. We've taken some questions on both Gopher Illustrated, the site that Ryan runs and publishes for, as well as the platform known as X, formerly known as Twitter. And so we've collected some of these questions. We got a ton of them. Thank you to all those that submitted questions. It's very unlikely we'll get to all of them due to time constraints and my ability to basically hold it before I have to go to the restroom really bad. So those are the two constraints we're working against here today. But Ryan, before that, we probably should get to some ads quickly and tell people that we are really excited to once again partner with Home Field Apparel.
If you haven't been listening the last few years, you're missing out on some of the best niche Gopher gear that, for the quality of material and for my money, which I value my money like you value your money, I think is arguably the best out there. Now, all you got to do is go to homefieldapparel.com, all one word. You can find the University of Minnesota, and I'm staring at it right now, where they just released, for those of you heading out to the Rose Bowl in just a few months' time, a brand new 1962 vintage Rose Bowl shirt. And to go with that, I love that the description on this, Luke, is Minnesota vintage dad hat.
I don't have this yet, but I'm going to have to get this.
Yes. Or even if you're thinking about the North Carolina game, which I believe is a gold out to begin the season. If you don't have any gold shirts, they got plenty of gold stuff right there on the website. So all you have to do, go to homefieldapparel.com, find what you would like, put it in the cart, and when you get to checkout, use the promo code GG24. That's the letters GG and the numbers 24, four characters in total. At checkout, you get 15% off your first order. So homefieldapparel.com, promo code GG24 at checkout, 15% off your order.
I think the important thing about Homefield we have to say too, Ryan, is this code applies all across the site, not just for Gopher gear stuff. And I personally have some Washington Husky gear stuff. I also have, I have a couple other shirts as well.
Well, if you're super into obscure schools now,
that's a good point.
25 is out.
Yeah.
Like, if you've now become a founding member of the Chattanooga Mox dynasty or whatever, yes, obscure college, I can guarantee you Homefield has it, or see even like Delta State. Like, if you are super into that, the number of awesome, just niche t-shirts and just apparel out there is expansive. Yeah. On Homefield Apparel.
So yeah.
To Luke's point, it doesn't have to be just Gopher stuff. It could be pro sports, but if you're super in to NCAA 25 and you're playing with some weird school, go get some gear. I'm sure they'd appreciate you.
All right. We also should get in a shout out to our good friends at Dinkytown Real Estate. Ryan, again, just to remind our listeners, Dinkytown Real Estate offers 1% of the commission that they receive. So this can be a significant sum of money on the sale. So this is of the total price of the home sale. They're going to give that to Dinkytown athletes, and you can elect to what sport you may want that to support. This is a great way to support Gopher athletics and Gopher NIL efforts with Dinkytown athletes. I think more importantly, Ryan, this is a really good way to move capital in a way to support Gopher sports that isn't having to put down your own cash, right? And I have heard there is rumor that a Gopher coach actually is selling their house with Dinkytown Real Estate Group. And I think this is just a brilliant way to push capital towards NIL efforts in Minnesota.
So you're telling me TeamDinkytown.com is going to be breaking who got fired or who just got hired because this is the way it's going. Breaking stuff here from Luke Buehr. But if that is true, Luke, where now there's a Gopher coach using the lovely folks at Team Dinkytown, I can already guarantee, because I know of one, there is a current Gopher parent who has also used Team Dinkytown because they heard about them here on Gopher Gridiron Radio, and they were wildly happy with their decision. If current Gopher parents and now a current Gopher coach are using them and you're thinking about buying or selling in today's real estate market and you want to help out your favorite local college team, go to TeamDinkytown.com. You can check everything out there, or you can give them a shout today at 612-250-8562.
All right, Ryan, I have categorized all of our questions that we received on Twitter and GI into a couple of subtopics, okay? So I'm going to give you the opportunity to pick, because you're going to answer most of these. Some of these we'll dialogue about, but most of these are directed at you. You can imagine that my headings are pretty simple. So I have good questions. I have recruiting. I have insane questions. I have hunting, and I also have special teams. So I feel like, especially that special teams section, that is totally probably focused towards you. So where do you want to start? Do you want to start with good questions, insane questions, or maybe special teams?
Did you attempt to do this Jeopardy style? Because I feel
I didn't, but you did
your best Alex Trebek.
I didn't, but that's... That's a good, most of these don't have many questions, but I did try to categorize them as I was going through all them. I did read all them. I copied and tried to get to most of them that I could. I can't get to all of them. We just don't have enough time. But yeah, I tried to categorize them as I saw fit. So
first and foremost, if you don't hear your question, blame Luke Buehr because he did all the legwork in determining what questions went into what categories and which ones I get to answer. And number two, Luke, question for you before I pick a category here. Do you consider yourself more of an Alex Trebek or more of a Will Ferrell? Because the Will Ferrell SNL bit has to be top five SNL bits of all time in my mind.
I think on this show, I'm probably more Alex Trebek. Maybe in real life, I'm a little bit more Will Ferrell. You know, I try to be a little bit more serious on the pod than I am maybe in real life.
Oh, look at you. Well, you know, I'm going to wear my big funny hat. So I guess let's start with special teams. Let me just rip off the Band-Aid immediately. Okay. Change a new leaf. Change my best with a Necton mentality for 2024. Let's start off with special teams.
Okay, I'm going to start from Twitter, from hats off to the. How many interviews with special teams coach has Ryan lined up already?
Oh, boy. So
didn't you get one already on GI?
Yeah. Well, that's the funniest part is I didn't get a single chance to interview Rob Wenger. And
yeah,
it was probably for the best. And I'm not going to out the people on the Gopher side of things because I'm sure they'll hear about it. And then I get an angry phone call or an angry face-to-face intervention about it. But it was determined essentially at this point back when Rob Wenger was here that it's for the best if he and I just don't do an interview. That's kind of what I was told. And all right, fine. So when Bob Loguszewski, Minnesota's new special teams coordinator, was hired,
yeah,
I immediately put in for the request, and we actually got him to speak in the spring. Now, that's essentially the only time Gopher assistant coaches talk to the media. I don't anticipate getting him again during fall camp or anything like that, but I have talked to him. That interview's up on Gopher Illustrated. It was interesting because Loguszewski has been coaching college football and in the NFL for now. This will be his 40th year. And considering I told you my birthday is in a couple of weeks and I'll be 32, he's actually been coaching football longer than I've been alive on this planet. He's been coaching special teams for a majority of those years. So it'll be very interesting to kind of see how he and PJ Fleck figure this out, because I'm going to ask Fleck here in about 48 hours. This will be not the way I phrase it, because if I phrase it this way, I won't get the answer that any of us want. But your return game has been an unmitigated disaster for years. How are you going to fix that?
Yeah.
Or are you actually going to set up a punt return? Or are you just going to play punt safe for 90% of these things? So there's a lot of things I'm going to be very curious to see. Because historically, or even in recent years, when Loguszewski was at Syracuse last year, they were among the most aggressive return units in Power 4. So we're going to find out if Loguszewski wins out, or if Fleck still feels like in year 8, he doesn't have the athletes or the blocking bodies to set up a return.
I think it's safe to say then that we're going to skip this question from Darren Opp. He asked, what changes can we expect from the special teams coaching change? I think at this point we don't know, but given what you said, they were, you know, Loguszewski was more aggressive. We know PJ's background of being kind of risk averse and oftentimes not being aggressive. So it will be interesting, but I just think the jury's out and we just don't have enough of a sample size. Or, I mean, you've had one interview with him. I don't know if anybody else has, but
yeah, we don't get to see any special teams essentially during spring ball, and we'll see how much we get to see during fall camp. I would say to Darren, the thing I think all of us will notice is if they do find actual consistent success in a kick return, where instead of Minnesota taking the ball out and then starting at the 16 to the 18 and consistently losing 7 to 10 yards of field position, if they actually can get it to the 25, God forbid there's a return touchdown. I will remind people, Minnesota has not had a punt return touchdown since Demetrius Douglas in 2018, and they have not had a kickoff return touchdown since Rodney Smith did it in 2017. It's 2024 in the year of our Lord as we currently sit here today. So that would be the biggest thing I think we would notice. Can kick return find some success? Does Minnesota actually set up a punt return? Or do they actually try to block something? So those are the hypothetical changes. But in terms of what we know definitively right now, as Luke said, it's still a little too far out.
All right. And just to close out on special teams, because these are basically the same question. This from Skyu Pod. They said, is there an open competition for kick and punt return spot, or is the Redding guy the guy since PJ seems to trust him? But then I like Norwegian Gophers question just a wee bit more. He said, who is our starting fair catcher this season?
Who's the one who we just get to watch the ball either bounce 15 yards in front of him or sail over his head? Yeah, sure. Don't get me started about all of that. But here's what I would say. I would say Quentin Redding is the favorite heading into fall camp. I would say at both spots right now, considering Fleck is huge on the trust aspect of it. And yeah, Redding's done it for years and he's had some success. But I'm not sleeping on Kristen Hoskins. I'm not sleeping on Coy Parrish. I think there are other receivers and other running backs that could potentially do something there. And especially with a change in special teams coordinator, it's a fresh slate for everybody. So while Wenger and Fleck may have really been big Quentin Redding people, I think Loguszewski gets a fresh view of it, and you're in year 8 in a Big Ten program now. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to find dynamic athletes that can change the game field position-wise. And so I do think that the starting fair catcher is probably going to be Quentin Redding, and he'll probably be one of the two primary kick returners as well. But there's a lot of things that have to shake out. One of the things that Fleck and these players always say is a job is not won until fall camp, which should be true.
Yeah.
You set yourself up in the spring and the summer to win the job in fall camp, but ultimately you have to go win the job. So that's what's going to be dictated over the next 3-4 weeks. But I think Quentin Redding is probably the favorite for both.
All right. So you want to go good.
Is that
question.
It?
Yeah.
I made it through. I didn't get too angry
yeah,
with special teams.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. And I thought we might just hit one of those, but we just tackled all of them. So sorry that this is a special teams centric podcast mailbag episode. Do you want to go recruiting? An insane question. Hunting or good questions?
Let's do some recruiting because Minnesota does have a camp on Saturday, which I'll be at. I think it's going to be pretty well attended for sophomores, aka the 2026s. Plus, there's going to be some 2025s in town as well for their what they call their hyper hangout. So if you want all that, I will remind you, $1 to get behind the paywall, go for Illustrated. But let's do some recruiting ones that get to be a little bit more free.
All right. So from P underscore Minnesota one, do you think having to play out west more often is helpful in recruiting?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the proof will be in the pudding in time. But I would say the early indications are yes. For a school like Minnesota, where I'm sure I can see the questions now, that we'll get into how much I loathe the in-state recruiting and how it's not very good. So one of the areas that you can expand to that maybe you can have more success in than the southeast part of the country would be California, New Mexico, Arizona, Oregon, that kind of area, especially because Minnesota is going to be out there. Everybody here listening to this probably has already booked their flight and hotel for Pasadena this year. I think next year you get to go to Cal Berkeley. And I think Minnesota also plays Oregon next year. Yeah, they're at Oregon, at Cal. And then I think going forward as well, you get Washington, Luke's favorite sailgating in 2026. So there's at least one
there.
Aspect to sell to a recruit that if you're from the West Coast, you'll get at least one game a year where we will come to you, mm-hmm. where your family doesn't have to fly from LAX or Portland or wherever it may be up to the Twin Cities to watch a game. But I do think it's going to help them. I think Minnesota has certainly tried to lean into that a little bit more this year, maybe more than ever. And I think being able to say we're going to be back out here for a game is a lot easier to sell to mom and dad.
All right, so let's zoom this in more close to home here in Minnesota. And Nokomis Gopher asks on GI, is the number of overall high school players shrinking in Minnesota or just the numbers at the top, like the Power 4, Power 5 level? And then just to tag on to this, is this overall high school football quality in Minnesota a problem for just the U or specifically for the U or just... Or does it reach down to like the St. Thomas, the D2, and even the MIAC levels?
That's a great question. I would say this. It's a science that isn't perfect, recruiting that being, especially recruiting teenagers, where you don't know how they're going to look at 21, 22, 23 when they're going to be playing football compared to 18, 17 when you sign them out of high school. What I would say is this. Let's just use the 2025 recruiting class right now in the state of Minnesota for an example. The highest rated player that we have rated is an 87. There's three different players rated as an 87. Two of them are committed to Minnesota, Emmanuel Carmo and Abu Tarawale. Well, you go over to Luke's second favorite school in Rutgers, which is located in the state of New Jersey. Luke, do you know how many players in the state of New Jersey we currently at 24/7 Sports have ranked higher than an 87?
I have no clue, but I know that New Jersey is a fertile recruiting ground, so I'm going to go with like 23.
You're actually pretty close. I'm pretty sure it's 22.
Okay. Wow.
So why is Rutgers recruiting so well? Other than I've heard some pretty interesting things about how Rutgers is throwing a lot of money into their NIL for football. Which don't get Luke started about the way Rutgers athletic department runs the deficit every year, yet they don't. Luke, how much exsanguination or how much do you loathe the way that Rutgers runs their athletic department?
Yeah, let's just say that I wouldn't run my businesses at such a significant deficit. But that's just me. That's just how I roll.
So if the state of New Jersey has 22 or 21 players ranked higher than the entire state of Minnesota does, I think you can try to see the point I'm making here. To the question, though, I would tell you the whether it's the Dakota schools, Missouri Valley, St. Thomas, it doesn't really trickle down to them, because I would say this, this state does a really good job of producing FCS talent. Why does South Dakota State and North Dakota State consistently in the national title games? Because their talent, which comes from, for them, whether it's Brookings or Fargo, that 8 to 10 hour radius from them, there's a lot of kids that they can take that Minnesota can't take because they're maybe more of a project. So why does, again, I don't have a specific example off the top of my head because I don't think Trey Lance or anything would be a good example, but it is really a Minnesota problem. Because, and don't get me started about all of that, considering Iowa and Wisconsin, I think I looked back over the last 3 to 5 years, and I think approximately they were producing 30-ish% more Power Four recruits than the state of Minnesota. There isn't one fix to it either. And that's the thing, is I can identify the problem, but I also want to offer out a solution. I don't know what the solution is other than the state of Minnesota, I believe, is the number one producing state in the NHL for hockey players. Well, if some of those hockey players don't get specialized in an early age, maybe they become linebackers. Maybe they become really DBs, good defensive ends.
Yeah.
Or some of these basketball players. Minnesota is a very fertile state in terms of per capita for Power Four basketball players. I think it's one of the best top 10. Does that sound right in the country, Luke?
I mean, I think you'd be right. I mean, you can think of examples in both the recent history and like distant past of like arguably your best football player was Joe Mauer the year, you know, he ended up getting drafted and going playing baseball. He was also an excellent basketball player, but also like a Jalen Suggs, he was probably your best football player and he didn't go. You think of even more closely,
heck, I would have Daniel loved to Freetag. See Will Teixeira play tight end instead of go to the University of Michigan and play basketball.
Yeah, I mean, even like Daniel Freetag, I think I would
would
say
have been a great receiver.
Yeah, I think he would have. I would argue, and I'd stay on this, that he's a much better football player than he would be basketball player. I think he's going to be a solid basketball player. I just think his upside is much higher in football.
And that's where there's just not one fix to it. I wish there was. I know Fleck and his staff wish there was. They wish the state produced, like I said, New Jersey has got to have probably 30-something Power Four signings coming up in this 2024 class. Minnesota is going to maybe be at double digits, maybe. As we currently sit here today, I believe there's 7 or 8 kids committed to go Power Four, mm-hmm. and that's it. And there's not the high-end talent like there was last class with the Coy Parriches and mm-hmm. those guys of the world. So that's where if you're just in a below-average year, which I would say this in-state recruiting class is for the juniors that are going to be seniors here in a couple months, it just kind of is what it is. And that's where I think – why is Fleck not exactly knocking this 25 class out of the park other than you went below 500 last season? Well, if your in-state talent base isn't that great, that's also going to play a role in it. Very long-winded answer, but I think it's one I could spend hours talking about.
Yeah, at some point maybe we should do an off-season episode in this. I think it's an interesting topic for sure, but we probably shouldn't spend a lot more time on it. Do you want to stick in recruiting or do you want to jump to a different topic now?
Let's do a couple good questions.
Okay. So there are a number of, I thought, pretty good questions here. And one that I'm sure we're going to talk about in the coming weeks, so we don't have to go into it too deep. But from Twitter, Dirk Don't Work asked, which group has the most glaring depth issues? He or she, I'm assuming it's a he, cited linebacker, cornerback, safety, wide receiver, or a different group in your estimation?
That's a great question. I don't know that see, the word depth there is the key word. I think Minnesota has more depth at linebacker, certainly, than they did last season.
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Maverick Baranowski and Tyler Stolsky and Devin Williams and Matt Kingsbury got some experience, so this year it shouldn't be deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
That's where I would probably, if you're going to point to one group, I would lean safety, but he's not wrong about corner. And I'll explain why after I touch on safety, because safety at the strong safety, it wasn't good last year. It was Darius Green and Aiden Goosby being worked in. They had their ups. They had more downs. I mean, that's just to be expected in year one of any player at a school like Minnesota getting significant reps for the first time. But it's that free safety spot that now without Tyler Newbin, you're really banking on number one, Goosby and Green taking a step forward at strong. But then that three-man competition, it's at free safety between Coleman Bryson, Kerry Brown, who started the bowl game for them, and then, yes, Coy Parrish. Who wins out? And between them, I mean, we're talking about guys that haven't played a ton of football. I think Coleman Bryson has started three or four games so far in his career. Kerry Brown has only started one, and that was as a true freshman in the bowl game last year. And then Coy Parrish, while very, very talented, is also still a true freshman. Mm-hmm. So you just don't have a lot of experience there. So I would probably say safety, but I say corner too, because they have arguably the most experienced corner duo that I can remember in my time covering at Minnesota, outside of, say, Eric Murray and Brian Boddy Calhoun. Justin Wally is going to be a four-year starter. He's going to have Ethan Robinson next to him, who's also got 2,000 career snaps. Now, yes, it was at Bucknell, which is the FCS level, but you've got a ton of experience there. But behind them is nothing. It's Zaquan Bryan, it's Rylan Kelly, and then it's freshmen, more or less. Maybe Evan Redding can get in there as well. But we're talking about guys behind them that have little to no playing experience. And so that's where I feel really good about starting corners on the outside. But behind them, whether it's this year because of an injury or next year just because both Robinson and Wally graduate, it's going to be a little leery at corner at some point here in the next 2 years as guys get their feet wet.
Yeah. One thing that I think is interesting, I wanted to try and get definitions on Ryan, is like depth is an interesting topic, especially in this NIL era, right? So traditionally we think of depth as, you know, the people that can come in and fill in when there are injuries or someone's not playing well, you know, what kind of depth do you have drop off? I think a lot of schools are going to be hurt with their depth because other people have opportunities elsewhere. The other kind of maybe definition of depth that that Dirk Don't Work is getting at might be like wide receiver, where we know that Daniel Jackson was able to put up numbers, but we haven't seen consistent numbers elsewhere. And who else is just going to like produce, right? So this is where GI person Kel 33 asked, will someone step up to be a legit number two receiving option?
I'm going to touch on one more thing about depth and then I'll hit that one. I'd argue if you wanted to pitch me on quarterback being the most glaring depth issue, I wouldn't disagree with you, because you go from Max Brosmer to either a true freshman or a redshirt freshman. It's either going to be Drake Lindsey or it's going to be Dylan Wickie. And that's where the most important position in football, arguably in all of sports, is quarterback. And if you're one ankle turn away from seeing what Drake Lindsey looks like as a true freshman or a different redshirt freshman, that's not great. Now, how do you get there? Because your 2021, 2022, and 2023 quarterbacks that you signed as scholarship guys are no longer here. Ethan's at Rutgers, Jacob Knuth is at Kansas State, and Drew Vioto is at Eastern Michigan. That's how you got to where you get to. Now, that's not a Greg Harbaugh problem. That's a Kirk Ciarrocca problem. Those are all Kirk Ciarrocca recruited quarterbacks, and they're all no longer here. But getting to the receiver question, I hope so, man, because Daniel Jackson's going to get double-digit targets a game. And I truly believe that you're finally going to see Minnesota throw to the running backs this year, especially on the perimeter. Number one, because Max Brosmer is very adept at that. He's done it to an extensive degree in his career at New Hampshire. Now, it helps that his best skill position player when he was there was Dylan Lobb. If you don't know who Dylan Lobb is, you're going to be thinking about him as a 14th round pick in your fantasy football draft.
Yeah.
Because he's a running back now for the Las Vegas Raiders. So if you're at Luke's favorite CAA school in New Hampshire and you have an NFL player on your roster, yeah, I'm probably going to get him the ball in space as much as I can. So that means guys like Darius Taylor, C.A. Mingura, and we'll see who also can catch the ball out of the backfield, they're going to get, I don't know, handful of targets a game, from what I understand is the plan going into fall camp. But that's still a bunch of pieces of the pie from last year that also don't return. You're without Brevin Spanford, Corey Crooms, Chris Ottman-Bell, among others.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me today who I think steps up, I would hope it's Elijah Spencer, 2021 Conference USA Freshman of the Year, prolific stats as an underclassman at Charlotte, transfers to Minnesota, and it goes about as pear-shaped as it could possibly go for him. Only catches 9 passes. Now, 3 of them were for touchdowns.
Yeah.
But he has shown that he can do it. And I think the Shrine Bowl 1000, which is one of the postseason games, put him on a watch list, which he is capable of doing it. It's just, can he do it consistently? I know that when we've been at practice, he struggled with drops at times. If he can just catch the ball consistently, he can get open. It's just catching the ball consistently. And if it's not him, it could be Luke's favorite player, 2022's Wisconsin freshman, Wisconsin hero of the game in Lemeke Brockington, who took that slant to the house with under 5 minutes left. And if it's not him, then you get into the young receivers. We're talking the 22-23 class of Christian Driver, the Penn State transfer I've heard good things about. You got Nuke Hayes, you got Kenrick Lanier and TJ McWilliams, who both of those last two guys were All-Americans and 4-stars. And then you've also got the Georgia transfer and Tyler Williams, who, from what I understand, if you use him on NCAA 25, he is murdering people out there. So the question is, can someone step up? I believe it was how it was phrased. I freaking hope so, because someone, and it's not just someone that needs to step up as a legit number two option. It's someone's. It's, you need to have at least two other quality receivers that you trust in, especially by the time you get to that Iowa game, because it does not get any easier after that. But if you ask me who is leading the race for that right now, from what I understand, it's probably Elijah Spencer.
Okay. So let's go either good question, insane question, or recruiting or hunting.
Let's go insane question.
All right. This was what I thought was maybe the most insane. This is from Twitter. This is from JM Bush.
Okay.
What is one upset you think Minnesota will pull off this season? And what is one game you think Minnesota will lose as the favorite? Well, first of all, let me justify why I think this is an insane question. I think that a ton of the Gophers' schedule is 50-50, right? There are a good number of games that are 50-50. There are a lot they're not going to be favored in. So you're in there. There's, I shouldn't say a lot. There are a few games that they're absolutely not going to be the favorite in. And I think it would be a massive upset. But what do you think the odds are that they actually pull that upset off? And then I don't know how many games are going to be, they're going to be favored in, that they're drastic favorites and that we think they're going to lose.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we get into the season preview. But to your point, Luke, there's going to be two games on the schedule where you're 2 touchdown underdogs or more. That's Penn State at home, and that's Michigan on the road. There's 2 games that you will be probably 3 touchdown favorites, and that is Rhode Island and Nevada, which those teams are terrible. Those ones, let me tell you, from talking especially to their beat writers, they couldn't be as pessimistic as they are right now. Those are just not good football teams. And then you have 8 games that are going to be plus or minus a touchdown in Vegas spread, including the opener, which I think Minnesota is a 2 or 3 point home favorite.
Yeah.
So I get why you put in the insane one, because it's not like there's a ton of games where you're an upset or you're on upset alert or you upset somebody. There's just so many games where it's going to be, is in this game, are you 40-60 to win, or are you 60-40? Now, if I have to pick a game where I don't think Minnesota will be favored in either one of the rivalry games, whether that's Iowa or Wisconsin, I would pick Minnesota to do one of those. Mm-hmm. I feel pretty good that Minnesota is either going to get the pig or they're going to get the axe. But what game will they lose as a favorite? I wonder in that stretch between the bye weeks, what the spreads will end up being. And for those of you who haven't figured it out or haven't looked at the schedule yet and haven't memorized it, Minnesota does have two bye weeks this year. One the weekend of October 19th, one the weekend of November 16th. And in between is, I will argue, the most critical three-game stretch on the schedule. You have Maryland at home, on the road in Champaign, where you still have yet to beat Brett Bielema. Mm-hmm. And then on the road for Justin Gard's favorite game, the revenge game narrative. At Rutgers, you have Shiraka versus his mentor in Harbaugh. You have the Corey Heatherman angle, eighth and Callie McManus. I cannot tell you how rubbed up Gardzi already is about that. So it wouldn't shock me if they lost. I mean,
well,
if they lost all three, they shouldn't. And they'll probably be favored, I would have guessed, in at least two of those.
Yeah, Rutgers will be coming off.
Slightly favored.
Rutgers will be coming off their bye. They have arguably the best schedule on all the Big Ten this year. They don't get Ohio State. They don't get Michigan. They don't get Penn State.
Which is why many media people are now bullish on them for this year, because I'd argue their toughest game is going to be early in the season when they have to go on the road to Virginia Tech, or they have to go on the road to Nebraska. Again, they miss a lot of, they have some tough road games, but their home schedule, Howard, Akron, Washington in year one of a rebuild. Yeah. Yes, they have the Badgers at home. They have Minnesota at home, Illinois. But I just want to see how far can Ethan Callie McManus carry a team?
Mm-hmm.
Because I would argue he's the biggest question mark of their – he's going to be the one to dictate. Does Rutgers have a plus year where they win eight games? Or does inconsistent Ethan come back and they're going to be struggling to get to a bowl game?
Yeah. And my question there with them is, you know, we saw with him, he often start games hot, but he, you know, his splits as you go through the quarters regress.
Right.
He also played behind a better offensive line at Minnesota than he probably will play behind at Rutgers. And we know how much he got kind of skittish. That's going to be something to watch for them. Back to the question though. If you look at it for Minnesota, I think it's likely that Minnesota in games that they might not win or they might lose where they could be the favorite. I'm looking at like at UCLA, in Pasadena. It's very possible that they are a heavy favorite. And all this is going to be depending on how the early stretch of the schedule goes. But you know, your first time traveling out west, you know, there's going to be a lot of Gopher fans there. But that could be one maybe they could drop, but that they could be a favorite. The other ones, I just don't know who they're going to be a sizable favorite against, other than you said, you know, Rhode Island or Nevada, which I don't see it likely happening. It is possible though.
I don't know if you've looked, and I know you just use UCLA as a random example, more or less.
Yeah.
But do you know the three-game stretch that UCLA has before the Golden Gophers come to town?
No, I don't.
It is, I'd argue, it is the toughest three-game stretch.
Oh, LSU, Oregon, and Penn State. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. They're on the road in Baton Rouge, which is either an afternoon or a night game. Mm-hmm. Godspeed. Then they get to host college football playoff contender Oregon at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, by the way, the week before the Gophers come to town, they have to travel UCLA out to Penn State. So, and I don't know, has Penn State picked their whiteout game yet?
I don't know. No clue.
It doesn't look like they have yet, unless it's going to be Illinois for homecoming. But yeah, it's just here's the thing. I hate when media, you know, how do I want to phrase this? They believe they have it all figured out 5 weeks ahead of time. Look, I know more about Gopher football than 99.9% of the population in terms of this year's team. It's my job. I have to. But there's even things I don't know. Like, I just don't know so many things about how Minnesota's going to look, how so many of their opponents are going to look, because so many of them have brand new transfer quarterbacks, including Minnesota. So who gels, who doesn't gel? It's going to be a very odd year, I think, for so many Big Ten teams in year one of the West teams coming in.
Okay, let's go. You want good question, recruiting, or hunting?
Let's go back to another good question.
All right. This comes from, it's from Twitter, from Milbank The. He says, football question here. Which coach on staff would you say is the best at developing the talent he has to work with?
Brian Callahan.
I
would say, from what we have seen, I don't remember how many years it had been since Minnesota had an offensive lineman drafted. I think it was the stretch before Falele got drafted, went back before Jerry Kill to, I think it was Setterstrom in 2006. So there was a 12, 13 year stretch, something like that, where Minnesota somehow didn't produce a single NFL draft pick. And now they've had Falele, John Michael Schmitz. I could potentially have a couple of them coming up in next April's draft with Ariante Ursery and Quinn Carroll. Yes, I am still buying stock that Quinn Carroll can be a interior offensive lineman, potentially playing on Sundays. And then you look at the way that they've recruited here in the last couple of recruiting classes with Brett Carroll and Nathan Roy. You'll get to see Philip Daniels and Greg Johnson. I think about Ursery. Like, Ursery wasn't a four-star. I mean, he was a kid from Kansas City that Minnesota saw at a camp, and they've developed the absolute crap out of him. Or even think about the guy next to him this year, who Pro Football Focus was a big fan of last year, in Tyler Cooper. You know, stand up St. Croix Falls, because he went from someone that didn't have any other Big Ten opportunities, more or less, to now he's going to be a multi-year starter at left guard, and he's been pretty good. So I think what Callahan has done should be commended, because especially in the Big Ten, it starts up front. And I think for what he's done, for the caliber of player he's been able to get, he's probably my vote.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And he's also the longest tenured, right? So we see the sample size. I'm trying to think, has anybody been here as long as him?
Matt Simon has.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm. I think that might be the only one,
he's
though.
He's put Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman out there. But I think it's a big year for Matt Simon I'm tired of Monday morning press conferences with PJ Fleck and him lamenting about the inconsistencies at receiver.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a big year for this receiving core.
Yeah. All right. Good questions. Recruiting or hunting?
Good question.
All right. We are going to go back to Twitter. So I did not look these stats up. So I'm going to take the tweeter at face value that these are accurate, and maybe
you know off the top of your head.
But JTrain 991 says, in 23, our run rate was number 13 highest in the country, 60%. In 22, it was 66%, good enough for fifth highest run rate. That's ridiculous. Does Brosmer get it closer to around the NCAA average of 51%? And any predictions on this year's run rate and how the passing offense changes fundamentally?
Well, if I'm going to be making proclamations and hashtag bold predictions here in late July, here's the one I want folks to remember that I'll put my name behind this early. I think Minnesota and Max Brosmer specifically, throws the ball more than any Gopher quarterback in the Fleck era. Now, what does that mean? I believe the record, from what I saw from researching, the most amount of times a single quarterback has thrown the ball in a PJ Fleck offense at Minnesota is 319 times. Now, if you divide that out over 13 games, my University of Minnesota math / Skyview Middle School math tells me it's just shy of 25 times per game. If Brosmer is healthy for 13 games, he's going to break that. Because they have to, because the way that it's going to go this year, with so many games going to be plus or minus a touchdown, you have to have a viable passing game and you have to be able to lean on it more. Now, in terms of what percent the run rate will be, I mean, to that Twitter folks question, I would say it's probably going to be closer to 55 to 58%. Again, I think Brosmer ends up at the end of the season, you're going to look at the stats, divide them out, probably somewhere around 27-ish times a game, which is still 10, 12, 15% more than what we've seen a Gopher quarterback do before. But I think a lot of that, too, is going to come closer to the line of scrimmage, because that's something that Brosmer's done well at New Hampshire. Minnesota feels good about what they have. And Darius Taylor, Jamison Gears, some of the other guys closer to the line. Mm-hmm. I just think they have to throw it more. And you saw that they wanted to last year. I mean, they came out against Nebraska and chucked it 40 times.
For sure.
They wanted to throw the ball, and it just, between the pass protection, between the quarterback, the pass catchers not catching consistently, none of it came together. Now, it all has to come together, and Brosmer has to be accurate. The offensive line has to be better. The pass catchers have to be better. But I do believe the intention of this Gopher football staff is to throw the ball more. They're not going to become Purdue. They're not going to become Texas Tech. But if they just throw the ball 27, 28 times a game, that's going to be much more than what we've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I just want to tack on to that too. You know, I think most people, when they think about throwing the ball more, they're going to think they're going to take shots downfield, right? And they're going to take chances. What I think you and I have clamored for a long time is that they try and spread the defense out, you know, more horizontally and not always just vertically, right? And try to get people options in space. What we've seen from Harbaugh in his one year as offensive coordinator, scheme wise, he can definitely scheme people open, and he did that consistently for Daniel Jackson. It's now doing that, but then being able to hit and execute on safety valves when it's not there, and being able to continue to make yardage in maybe less advantageous situations. That, I think, is where we saw Ethan struggle the most.
And that's where, just like any offensive coordinator in America would tell you, I mean, Minnesota needs to become two things on offense this year. They need to become more explosive, and they need to become more efficient. Because too many times last season, they weren't efficient on early downs. And if you're sitting there in second and third and long consistently, the play sheet gets a lot longer. The defense can just pin their ear back. And so that's where, if you can get into more second and fours, third and twos than you did last year, the ability to stretch the field. I mean, those two things go hand in hand. You rarely see an offense be explosive but not efficient, and you rarely see it be efficient but not explosive. And that's where Minnesota took a step back in both of those areas. We've covered that extensively. But that's where, if you can introduce this quick passing game into the equation, to not just know that you're going to run inside, mid, or outside zone, if you can give the defensive coordinator something else to think about, where if you can just throw a quick hitch and it's second and three, second and five, I mean, why isn't that the same as a handoff?
Yeah.
It's whatever can get this Gopher offense into more second and third and shorts, which I think you're going to find in turn generate more explosive plays, because then that gives defenses more to worry about.
All right. Recruiting, hunting, or good question?
Let's go hunting, because I was just out at the hunting land yesterday, putting up my first trail cameras of the season. And I'll tell you, I've got myself in some type of mood. I'm hoping that something shows up. Wasn't a great year last year, but I'll say this, Luke. I took the missus on a little ice cream drive, got her some ice cream, and in return, I got to drive around the fields, which she does not understand, by the way.
I don't understand. Have you ever
gone for a deer drive?
No, I mean, I've scouted fields, so I think it's similar, but this is like agricultural scouting. So
yeah, well, let me use different verbiage, because people hear deer drive, they think of, I'm going to go walk a hedgerow or bust out some kind of woods. You just drive around some of the agricultural fields, whether it's beans, corn, whatever it may be. I got a pair of binoculars sitting on the dash. She gets to eat her ice cream. I get to look around and see any big bucks in, I don't know, within 2 miles of the hunting land. And I will say, where I parked the truck, as this always ends up being, I look to my left, and 20 yards off the road there were a couple of nice ones, I would say. Well, let's get into the question first.
Okay.
What is the question?
This comes from Twitter. It comes from, I guess this is a twofer for Milbank. Okay. He or she asks, what is the estimated size of the biggest buck you have seen on your trail cameras? And how many inches off will Luke be when he tries to guess it? So this is the thing. I thought we measured deer by their number of points.
You do. That's the 101 version of it.
Okay. And then a point is only considered a point if it's 2 inches or longer. Am I right?
I don't know. I think it's less than that, but I could be wrong.
So am I estimating the rack size on these?
Yes. How many inches do you think is the biggest deer I've seen on camera in my 10, 15 years of owning tail trail
cameras? I need some more detail here. Is this outside point to outside point?
That's called the spread.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what we're measuring?
Nope.
You're measuring
the total number of inches that the rack is, both the left and right side.
Wait, so like every little jut out we count?
Correct. Every point, the main beams, everything.
Oh, man. So how many inches off do you think I'm going to be? I'm going to give you my answer.
Luke, I'll be honest with you. There's going to be a wide spectrum of answers for you here. I don't know where you're going to fall. Like, you're either going to nail it or you're going to be far off. You're just going to have to give your best guess.
So I'm going to guess that you're like getting an eight. The largest you've seen is probably like an 8-point buck. And I'm going to multiply that by, let's go on one side. And I'll go like 22 inches. And then that's 176. And then I guess I got to multiply that by 2. So I don't know that one off the top of my head.
You'd be somewhere around 350
inches. 352 inches.
So the answer that every deer hunter at home just listened to, Luke, you're off by probably 100 and, oh, I don't know, 180 inches or so.
Oh, geez.
I would tell you, if you see a 300-inch deer, they're going to be pinned up behind a fence somewhere, or somebody's just – I think the state record for the biggest wild game, whether it's typical or non-typical, I think is somewhere – I think typical is around 200 inches, and I think non-typical is somewhere 230-ish. That's a gigantic – I mean, that's a one – it's the state record. It's a once-in-a-generation type of deer.
All right.
So what I would say is the biggest buck I've ever seen on camera from where I actually hunt is probably 170-inch deer, which is gigantic. And I haven't killed anything like that. That's an easy, easy booner. I mean, it's gigantic. Now, I would say, I mean, I've killed a deer that field dressed 240 pounds, which... let me tell you about lifting that thing into the back of a truck. I can understand why so many people have heart attacks when they're like, it's snowblowers and lifting big bucks and dragging big bucks. Like, goodness gracious. That was back in my 20s. But I'm hoping I got at least a 150 on camera this year. I should. But I will also say, if anybody wants me to take a look at their deer hunting land, my DMs are always open. You'd be surprised, Luke, the number of people that actually slide into the DMs that we've now exchanged pictures with. Or, hey, if you want a new hunting partner, I'm also, you know, I don't have a ton of time in the fall, so it'd be primarily yours.
All right. Good question, or recruiting?
Recruiting.
All right. Thoughts on Heatherman as a recruiter? As a former linebacker coach, are you surprised he did not bring a recruiting/transfer with him?
I think the jury's still out. I would tell you the early returns are, they leave a little bit to be desired, I would say. And that, I don't want to talk poorly about the late 24 linebacker they took in David Amalieri, or the two kids that they have committed in Caledonia's Ethan Stendel or Illinois's Nathan Cleveland. I would just say, I don't understand kind of what the plan was. Amalieri is a guy who looks great, except he's 195 pounds, which he's a year away from being a year away. If that makes sense, he's got to be at least 220, 225, 230 before you want to throw him out on the field there. And that's 35 pounds from now. So he's going to take, I mean, you hope that he can help you in like 2027, or even someone like Ethan Stendel at Caledonia. Like, I have a ton of respect for Carl Frichte and what that program is. And what he has done for Caledonia is, he's one of the best high school football coaches in the state. And those kids are so hard-nosed and they're tough SOBs. But we're talking about a kid who didn't really play linebacker last year because Frickty needed him at quarterback. I played a little bit of safety, and then Nathan Cleveland had one other Power Four offer, and that was Kansas State and another high school safety. So let me tell you, Heatherman is a recruiter. He's looking for high school safeties to convert down. And if it goes well, like a 90th percentile outcome, it's Cody Lindenberg. But there's also a 50th percentile outcome where it's, say, Joey Gerlach. Where
yeah.
Gerlach's going to become more of a special teams player this year. He might start for them at Sam. You saw him get some bowl reps last year in the Quick Lane Bowl. I would just say I want to see more of a forward-looking plan, especially for 2026. You know, he gets here in January, and then he offered Cleveland and Stendel and Amelieri essentially in June. So as you went and saw all these linebackers, yet you didn't like any of them? Or what? I want to see more of a plan here going forward from Heatherman.
All right. I'm going to jump into this one. Yeah, I'm going to jump into a good question because I like this one, and I'm interested to get your thoughts. And I don't think this has been answered yet, but this is from Twitter. This is from Co-Sibs. Could you talk about pardon me? Could you talk about what you think the Big Ten will cap roster size at, and talk about the current roster, including walk-ons? And I imagine that's relative to the. Your hypothesized cap that the Big Ten's talking about.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. It's one that is still being talked about. I believe that what I saw today from Jim Delaney was they're talking
Jim Delaney.
About. Excuse me, not Jim Delaney. Goodness gracious. The Big Ten commissioner.
I wish he was back. Sorry. My bad. Continue.
The Big Ten commissioner. No, you should call me out on that. I should know who the Big Ten commissioner is. But it's going to go from 85 scholarships for football to potentially 105. I mean, that's an increase of, what is that, Luke, 25%?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Which is substantial, especially for a program like football. And that's where I think if you're Minnesota, and we go back to the recruiting aspect of it, maybe those kids that are on the fence where you're thinking to yourself, they might be able to make it here and they might be able to help us, but they're a bigger project than maybe another guy. Well, especially if they're an in-state guy, you're going to just take them then because you have more scholarships to play around with. I think a good example like that would be Colin Hansen from Byron. I mean, I watched him at camp, all of 6'5", 230, gave Andrew Trout a run for his money, which not a lot of people can give Andrew Trout a run for his money. And that's where, if scholarship sizes maybe weren't going to 105, maybe you would wait on him, see some more senior film, but you can maybe take more projects, and especially for like walk-ons. I think the thing to see, I think there's a lot of unknown with that yet in terms of, I mean, Nebraska has had insanely high roster limits forever, but even some of the current walk-ons, if you're asking me, who I'm bullish on in terms of helping the team, whether that's in a special teams role or maybe offensively, defensively. Oh, man. I would say on offense, I think Jackson Hunter, who's now into his later years here in the program, can be a depth guy for them potentially this year. At tight end, you might see Frank Bierman get some reps. I mean, Nick Callerup would be the ideal former walk-on to now scholarship guy, multi-year starter. At receiver, we'll see if someone like Cade Kanzemius can make an impact at some point. Maybe Cortez LeGrand at running back. Defensively, if you're asking me who the next walk-on, I believe, is to earn a scholarship, it's either Nate Becker, if he's not already, or it's going to be Evan Redding. Nate Becker, you've seen in some pass rushing packages, Maple Grove zone. Last year, I think he's firmly in the mix this year. And then Evan Redding is someone that's been getting a little bit of drumbeat behind the scenes. It was originally a wide receiver. They've moved him to corner. And I know that Nick Monroe is happy with what he's seen thus far. And he might be in the 2025 corner race once they get down to it. So it's going to be a lot of let's figure it out as we go on the fly, which is seemingly what college football has now become. But when scholarship limits do get raised to 105, potentially as soon as next year, It's going to be very interesting to see how Fleck and his player personnel staff elect to go high school versus transfer portal. Because again, that's another area mm-hmm. you could potentially expand, but there's a lot of unknown yet.
What do you think the odds are that they actually cap the number of people you can have on roster, even walk-ons?
What are the odds they do?
Yeah, like
50%. 50%. If you're a school like Nebraska, where the funds are just in a different stratosphere. If you want to have 140 people on the team and you can figure out a way to make it work, who's stopping you?
Yeah, I guess my point is if I'm running the NCAA and trying to put rules in place, or sorry, the Big Ten and trying to put rules in place, like I would think that I want to make it as equitable as possible. And obviously the number of scholarships and then even the number of people you can just roster is one way that you can do that, right? So this is a way that NIL, you can actually kind of control NIL to a certain extent, if you get my drift, mm-hmm. because you're not giving, a bunch of walk-ons NIL money that they can in turn use as scholarship money. Right. I just wonder if that just makes sense. And I haven't heard talk that they're going to do that. I know that they're talking about raising the number of scholarships, but I was curious if you had any intel on that.
I don't have any more intel than anybody else. I think a lot of people think they might, but there's so many conversations going on behind the scenes that there's a lot to be figured out yet.
All right. I'll give you, we'll end on this one. I thought this was a good question because we often get into the weeds on this episode. You usually listen to this podcast if you really like college football or you really like the Gophers. If you are just a fringe Gopher fan, we're usually not your podcast, right? And this came from Dagum Chili Hot 17.
That was the best enunciation of the episode. Can I have you try that again?
It's Day.
I want to hear you gum. In your best Southern accent.
Dagum Chili Hot. I don't have a Southern accent. I can't even get this. This is from GI. Can you explain the difference or the different D-line positions and why certain similar players fit one tech position versus another? Have to admit, when I read one or three tech, I'm not even sure what the difference is anymore from the days of either your D-end or your D-tackle.
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to dumb it down as best I can. I don't pretend to be the smartest guy in the room. I'm not Derek Burns. But I think the easiest way to start is defensive tackle. And when you think of a one technique body, I would think of Logan Richter. I would think of, for those of you who are also Vikings fans, think of Big Pat Williams. Just a giant nose that's 300 pounds that is going to be probably your defensive tackle that's the most adept at beating double teams, because that's all he's going to see. He's going to be lined up in Minnesota's defense as a one technique. A one technique is going to be between the guard and the center, essentially splitting the two. So you're going to be seeing a ton of double teams, and more times than not, your one technique is just going to be sitting there eating space, clogging the A gap, clogging the B gap, whatever it may be, getting his head in the backfield to see if he can shed a block and make a play on a tackle, or excuse me, make a play on the running back. And that's where maybe you're more twitchy or more explosive. Your most explosive guy, you're probably going to put it three technique. That's a guy that's going to be in between the guard and the tackle. And he's going to be your Devin Eastern type, where Devin Eastern can play either one of them because Devin Eastern's 300 plus pounds, but Devin Eastern is also very powerful. He's very twitchy. He's your pass rusher of the two, especially on passing downs. And that's where if you want your more explosive guy there, because more times than not, you're going to have a defensive end outside of the three technique. So that tackle is not going to be able to help you a ton. And you're going to get more one-on-one opportunities with the three technique opposed to the one, because the center can help either way. And that's where also within this defense, you switch to the outside. You have a rush end, which, as far as I know, Corey Heatherman is keeping. I saw that in the spring. And then you have a five technique defensive end. They're both defensive ends. One in Minnesota's defense, the rush end, is in a two-point stance. The other one's in a three-point stance. Now, you saw Jalen Logan Redding and Anthony Smith and Ja Joyner all play that five technique spot. the bigger defensive end of the two, someone that is more adept to setting the edge on a, in the run game. Probably not the best pass rusher out there. He's not the twitchiest guy in the world. And I say that, and that's where Jod Joyner plays more or less, is that five technique spot. But that's where on the flip side, the rush end in that two-point position, they're probably 25, 30 pounds less. They're in the 250-ish range, hopefully. The Danny Strigaus, the Jackson Howards of the world, they're your pass rushers. They're your guys that are going to give the offensive tackle more fits in terms of trying to bend the corner, trying to beat them inside with a spin move. But on the outside, from what I've heard, especially listening to Jod Joyner talk about it just a couple of weeks ago, one of the big reasons why Jod Joyner came back instead of hitting the portal was the way he understands it, Corey Heatherman is going to move him all around. And I honestly, it's probably the way it should be on passing downs, where you just want to get your four best pass rushers out on the field. The way I view it, and I think the way defensive line coaches probably also view it, is you're going to know going into that Saturday's game who the worst offensive lineman is in pass pro. You're going to know who the top two are. Well, all I would be thinking about if I'm Winston Dilladi-Boudaire would be, how can I get my two best pass rushers on their two worst pass protectors? And if you can have the versatility to play any one of these spots, more or less, now I would be very surprised if I saw Jod Joyner lined up across from the center, but it wouldn't shock me to see Jod Joyner maybe lined up on a guard in a five technique, three technique position, where he can pin his ears back and try to beat that player, or maybe Anthony Smith can beat him with power. It all depends on what that week's matchup is. So it's a little complicated. And in terms of why certain similar players fit one technique over the other, it all comes down to measurables. You know, what's your size? What's your length? How explosive are you? How not explosive are you? And then at the end of the day, too, as much as it is about that, who's your best 6-8 defensive lineman and how do you get them onto the field? So that's where you're going to see, I think at many different points this season, Anthony Smith, Jalen Logan Redding, and Jod Joyner all playing very different positions because they're all 280. Well, Jod Joyner's probably 260. Anthony Smith is now 285 pounds, which, let me tell you, I wish I could be 285 pounds and look that lean, and then so is Jalen Logan Redding. So it's just trying to get your, especially on early downs, Luke, you don't want to be giving up so much size that mm-hmm. you're going to get manhandled in the run game. But on the flip side, you don't want to be too heavy that you can't get a pass rush. So it's certainly something that Winston's got to play around with.
Yeah, definitely. Any parting thoughts before we sign off?
We're going to be weekly now. It's crazy to say that, but we're only 5 weeks away from North Carolina coming into town. So I'm excited to talk to Luke Buehr every single week and then twice a week as he giggles. And why does he giggle? Because he doesn't want any part to do
These
dulcet tones that put him to sleep every single week. I've seen your messages and emails, folks. I know my voice puts your one-year-old, six-month-year-old to sleep as well, maybe your wife. But I'm excited because we're under 40 days from Gopher football. You got Big Ten media days here just around the corner. You got a little bit of recruiting on the weekend, and then fall camp begins on July 29th, this Monday. So it's going to be hopping on Gopher Illustrated. I've said it before, I'll say it again. $1 for your first month, and after that first month, guess what you get for free, Luke Buehr? Paramount Plus. So if you want to watch anything on CBS this year, hey, and you don't have access to it already, there you go.
All right, yeah, I want to thank our sponsors again. We want to thank Home Field Apparel again, the promo code GG24 to save 15% on your first order. Also, if you're thinking about buying, selling, or influencing your friends to buy or sell their house, tell them to work with Team Dinky Town Real Estate Group because that's going to support Gopher Athletics by a donation to Dinkytown Athletes. I will be, Ryan, at the Dinkytown Athletes barbecue here on Thursday. So if you're there, come over and say hi. I will try to not make a fool of myself yet again, but I'm certain that I will. So again, I want to thank you all for listening, and go Pilgrims.